a very French gesture, full of disgust. But he spoke to me. You will deal with your traitor. Beast peeked back out and sent me a vision of sinking our fangs into Kemi's back, just below his skull, shaking him until his neck broke, before picking him up and carrying him away. Instead, I remembered the stench of lemons and the heat of the spell that had set off the fighting. A familiar taste of magic. Leo gave me an enigmatic look and gestured to his blood servants. Take the leopard to the playroom. Our Jane may use the Scion lair. Playroom? Right. Only a vamp would think of a room full of cages and with a drain in the middle of the floor as a playroom. Leo said softer, holding my eyes with his dark ones. I thought I had healed the rift with the werecats. I thought you had tamed the leopard beneath Rick. Magic, I said just as softly. Familiar magic. Someone found a way to override the bond, and fast. Ah. Leo knew about the anomaly's presence in HQ, and our inability to see the witch in real time. I looked back at my people. Eli's face closed and cold. Alex, a little more blanched than I expected of a player of violent video games. But then he had recently been attacked and left nearly dead. His hand was around his throat, fingering the new scars. I seldom even noticed them these days. But being human, he'd healed far more slowly than I did, even with all the vamp blood in him. I'll handle moving the werecat, Ed said softly from beside me. Rick LaFleur should interrogate him. My adrenaline washed away. Right. Okay. Do it. And then I remembered the image of Asad and Nantale licking their lips the first time I saw them in front of the SOD. Had they wanted to drink the ancient vamp blood? Had they been in HQ tonight long enough to actually do so? Had they been in Sub-5 while the ceremonies were taking place? Had they drunk SOD blood tainted by werewolf bites? I had to wonder what that blood would do to them, if it would make them fall under spells of aggression. Leo, take a whiff of the lions. Leo looked at me oddly, but he bent over the lions and sniffed. The scent of Josie Santana, the son of darkness, and of magic. I nodded, a scant motion against the migraine. Yeah, that's what I figured. I think they've been trying to get to the SOD since the first time they came here, and I think they finally got what they wanted. I think, maybe, that they aligned with Dominique and De Citron, and at some point before she tossed Callan a sword, Dominique led them to Sub-5 beneath a strong obfuscation spell. She had magical help, the spell big enough to hide them on the stairs, and they drank SOD blood. Tainted by werewolf saliva. What would it do to them? Would it alone make them crazy enough to attack? Or was that from the witches and or De Citron's magic in the room? Or both, working together? Leo shook his head. This I do not know. Eli, with me. Alex, get to security. Check the footage and find out what happened with the anomaly. Find out when the cats got to Sub-5 and why we weren't notified. I pointed at a security guy. You, go with him. No one travels alone in HQ. Alex sped away, his sense suggesting he was happy to be out of the blood-splattered room, the security guy on his heels. I turned my paw and patted down the hallway and the stairs to Sub-5. I kicked off my shoes when I half-shifted and the floor was cool to the touch on the stairs to the lower basement. I looked around fast, taking in everything. Old blood, werewolf stink, SOD and mold. The cameras were off. The last time Dominique was here, she had turned them off with a remote device. There were no uninvited wares present, but the SOD wasn't alone. A dozen HQ security, armed and twitchy, stood with weapons raised at three women, who were standing in a semicircle studying the human-shaped thing on the wall. They looked almost human, but were all likely arconciels. Not Sol, who I knew best, but Opal and Cerulean, and one I hadn't met. Brute was there, too. Brute biting Josie Santana's foot, drawing watery blood. The SOD had changed even more, and I guessed that he had been fed, possibly the blood of the vampire and the witch who were hiding in HQ. He was fully human-shaped, his face no longer slack-jawed. His eyes were open and he was laughing silently at his wolf tormentor. I ignored him and said to the security types, "Stand down. Return to your posts, by order of the enforcer." They didn't look happy about it, but after a moment, they left the basement by way of the elevator. Xi stepped out of the stairwell and bowed to the arc-en-ciels, his face lit with joy.
"My goddesses, greetings."
In unison, they nodded to him, and Xi assumed his place beside me, taking in the tableau. "Brute?" I asked. "We were just attacked in the gym by Werelions and Kamnebi, the black were-leopard who was injured here." I shrugged, not sure of the day. "Not long ago. Is it possible that they got a taste of the SOD recently?" Brute snorted, then nodded, his head moving up and down, the gesture unwolf-like and odd on his huge form. "Today?" He nodded. "Were they with Dominique?" Brute shook no. "Were they here with someone who smelled like lemons?" Brute tensed and nodded. "Well, crap, they divided up?" Brute stared hard at me and nodded. "Would the taste of SOD do anything to werecats, make them crazy?" He snorted and vocalized something that sounded like, "Ah-hoo." Maybe it was an answer, but I didn't speak werewolf. "You got any idea why no Grindelo showed up in the gym?" He snorted and vocalized again.
"Omi, omi."
The tone was different. The length of the snort was shorter, but again, I didn't speak werewolf and I couldn't figure out how to ask all my questions in simple yes-no form. The SOD was looking at me, still cackling silently. Hard to do with no heart. Hard to be undead with no heart. I figured it had grown back somehow. He lifted his head away from the wall, his long black hair sticking and coming away with a soft squeak. His jaw unhinged and his fangs unfolded. His fingers flicked open and I caught a flash of gem and gold. He took a breath that sounded like a coffin opening. Hoarsely he said,
"Yellow rock, ut omnis mortum."
I tensed to throw myself behind the doorway, but nothing happened. The SOD had just spoken a word of power, and nothing. No magical power swept the room. No magic tore and seared the air. I frowned, trying to figure out what had happened. The SOD rattled his entire body on the wall, the silver chains clattering.
"Ut omnis mortum,"
he screeched. And again, nothing. The arc-en-ciels put their heads together, and I had the distinct impression that they were chattering among themselves, silently. Mind power crap.
"Ut omnis mortum."
The last word I knew, it meant dead or death, but the first two words were less clear.
"To everyone, death,"
Xi translated thoughtfully.
"It is a word, and it should have killed us. Well, some of us. The curse failed."
He looked at Brute, then at me, studying me in my half-form. Without turning his head away from me, Xi asked,
"Brute, did you bite the Son of Darkness to take away his power?"
Brute wagged his tail and sank his teeth into the SOD's bare foot again. It wasn't an answer, but the SOD screamed in frustration and banged himself off the wall and back, the chains clinking more loudly. Xi asked again, his words a little different.
"Brute, when you bite the Son of Darkness, do you take away his power?"
Brute chuffed, and then he nodded his head up and down in the human affirmative, bouncing once on his front paws. Brute spun to me, his silver blue eyes less wolf-like than I had ever seen them. Human intelligence gleamed in them, and I knew. Over the sound of the SOD's raspy screams, I whispered, "Hael gave you the ability to time walk and to incapacitate the magic of the Sons of Darkness with your bite." Brute gave me a doggy grin, his tail wagging even more fiercely, and turned his attention back to the SOD. He bit down again and again, his wolf fangs piercing the bare feet of one of the fathers of all vamps, biting, biting, giving one of the two most powerful vamps in the world the wear taint, and no Grindelow was stopping him. I walked to the SOD and grabbed his nasty, slimy hand. On his index finger was a ring, a faceted brown diamond in a simple satin, a magical amulet. "Did Dominique give this to you today?" I asked. Josie's gurgled with laughter and clenched his fist. Brute nodded and vocalized again, "Well, me." He was trying to say, "Dominique, the vamp I hadn't killed well enough." Crap. I gripped the SOD's hand and pulled on the ring. He made a fist to stop me, and so I broke his finger and pulled off the ring, tucked it in a pocket as he screamed hoarsely. I turned from the drama in Sub-5 and pattered back up the stairs, texting Rick that his Zeta Cat had just attacked Rick's Alpha at HQ. He texted back that he would be at HQ in 4 hours. Then I found some Tylenol and a handful of ibuprofen for my headache. I managed to keep it down. In the Scion Lair, the playroom prison, where Leo or some other suckhead once kept his scions in the Devovio, I walked past Eli and Edmund, who were standing a good 6 feet away from a silvered cage. Inside was my new buddy, Kem Nebby. My silvered blade was still buried in the middle of his back. Kemi couldn't heal until the silver toxins of my sword cuts had flushed from his system. The stuck silvered blade made that impossible, and shift into either of his forms unattainable. He was trapped in cat form, paralyzed by a silver blade, his guts still spilled out on the floor. Alive, but in pain. I could smell it on the air, hear it in his panting breaths. Guilt. My old nemesis raised its head. Kem would kill me in a heartbeat, but I was sick at the sight of him there, being tortured. I opened the cage door, pulled a vamp killer, and squatted on the floor in front of his cage, balanced on my toes, my elbows on my knees. I leaned in and growled. It was a deliberately masculine position and a challenging growl. My lips pulled back, exposing my fangs. Letting my voice drop into beast's growl, I started with the easy question, saying, "Did Dominique and a lemon-scented witch cast a spell on you to free you from your tamed state?" Kem hissed at me, cat-style. "Did you harm the Grindelow who was supposed to watch you?" I placed my blade at his throat. Kem snarled, showing me his cat fangs. More slowly, I said, "Did you somehow kill your Grindy? You and the lions attacked when humans were present. The Grindy should have killed you all." The half-man, half-cat spat at me, the only gesture he could make with silver in his spine. "Why did you attack? How were you and the cats planning to disrupt the Sangre Duello? Nod that you'll answer these questions, and I'll pull out the blade so you can heal." He lifted his lips, showing his teeth. Deliberately, he shook his head no. I stood, closed and secured the cage door, and said, "No food, no water, no medical help, and no one removes the silvered blade until he's willing to tell us about the Grindy and about what's going on with the wares." I turned my back to the cat, a cat insult, and left the room, Eli on my tail, so to speak. In the hallway, the playroom door closed and I could smell Eli's anger. "You're leaving him in agony." I steeled myself to answer, "This isn't war, He isn't human, and he isn't covered by or protected under human laws. He is a werecat. He won't die. He'll suffer a bit, that's all. Jane, no. Too many seemingly unconnected things are happening right now. Too many possibilities, all leading back to the EVs and ahead to disaster. In the last few minutes, we've been attacked by werecats who acted crazed or spelled or both, one of which should not have been able to attack at all, too tamed for anything except getting his belly rubbed. We've smelled lemons. Dominique, who allied with Des Citrons, but might possibly be acting outside their wishes, has gotten in and out with ease, and she tossed Callan a sword. Callan attempted to kill the Outclan priestess. A witch is floating around HQ, and no one can seem to find her. I'll make sure Alex is researching them, but though they're an old clan, Des Citrons has managed to keep out of the historical eye for centuries. The clan may or may not be aligned with the EVs. They may be hoping to sit back and watch and then pick up the pieces later. Rick will be here in 4 hours. Rick, as Alpha, can make Kim talk. 4 hours to think about his sins. And then it hit me. I ducked my head to see directly into Eli's eyes. His were haunted. You saw injured enemy combatants tortured, didn't you? Aggressive interrogation. His lips twisted down. Confusion filled his face. It's... His words stopped abruptly. Inhuman and inhumane. I leaned into Eli, my shoulder touching his. His Grindy is missing. He may have killed it. Her. That's assuming Grindys can be killed. But his Grindy is a baby Grindy, a baby. They looked like kittens, neon green kittens with steel claws, but kittens. They were cute little killers. He wanted to kill humans, tried to kill Larry, and may have turned him into a furball. And Kem is my pack. It is my right to demand answers. Eli shook his head, but answered in the affirmative. Yeah, okay. For a werecat who didn't think twice about harming Larry. He made a fist and placed it on the door between Kim and us. Okay, 4 hours. Eli walked away, leaving me thinking about how much I had changed. About how easy it had been to slip away from humanity. Away from thinking about mercy and kindness. Mercy and kindness were hard. Hurting others was easy. The door opened and I met Ed's eyes as it closed. It was a thick door, heavy. It sealed with a little whoosh of sound I hadn't noticed when I entered and left. It was a door created to keep the screams of those inside from disturbing others in the hallway. It was a room built for imprisonment and torture. I'm a horrible person, I said, speaking to myself rather than to Edmund. Yes, my master, you are. But if I set him free again, he'll hurt the ones I love. Again. Yes, my master. He will. I have to take care of the people I love. That means... This was the hard part. The part I had realized several times over the last months. That means I have to become a monster. Gently, Edmund said, Have you not always been a monster, my master? I took in a breath that hurt as if I had been stabbed. I turned from the room where I was actively torturing an enemy and started to walk away. Faint screams came from the room behind the heavy door. My heart leaped in my throat. Ed slammed the door open. We both raced inside. Kemnebi lay inside his cage, his throat sliced away, his blood emptying out toward the drain in the middle of the floor. His cage was still secured. The Grindy was standing atop the cage, her neon fuzz bloodied, her ankles and neck showing ligature marks where rope of some sort had dug into her flesh and abraded off the hair. She had been tied up. She had gotten away and killed a were-leopard inside his cage. Right. Not exactly a kitten. Eli appeared at my side. Well, hell, he said. Vamps and wares and their blasted layers of conspiracies within plots, within intrigues, within treacheries. I need to see the parley papers. We need to talk to Leo. Chapter 11.
You knit your shit. Edge hit chap.
We were walking into the foyer when a man's voice stopped us saying, "Legs?" The nickname meant it was one of the longtime security guys. Team Tequila or Team Vodka. "Hey, Antifreeze," I said, slowing. "It's good to see you up and moving. How are you?"
"Not bad, Legs. Suckheads pay better for injuries than Uncle Sam, and don't dump you for wounds."
He held out his good hand, and there was a folded note between two fingers. Folded but unsealed meant it had been seen by everyone. That it wasn't private.
"From the MOC.
I unfolded the paper, seeing my long-fingered hands move. I hadn't even noticed I was still in half-form. In Leo's distinctive calligraphy were the words, "The Master of the City requests that the Master of Clan Yellow Rock join us in my office before you depart." Master of Clan Yellow Rock. Not Jane, or my Jane, or Enforcer. Names and titles meant something to vamps. This was city or clan business, and fortuitous since we needed to chat with him. I passed the note to Eli, who gave his service smile, a twitch of lips. I chuckled, and the sound was half-beast. Antifreeze flinched just the tiniest bit. Right. I was a monster, and living with monsters never got easier.
"Let's go visit Leo in his office,"
Eli said, his voice hard and emotionless. It was the voice he used when he planned to beat up someone. It made me feel all warm and fuzzy. "Thank you," I said politely to Antifreeze. On my bare paw pads, I climbed the foyer stairs to Leo's office, Eli on my heels, knocked, entered when he called out, "Entrez." I walked through the entry with its fireplace and expensive rugs and wall hangings to find Leo at his desk, me still in half form, Eli wearing his battle face. Leo was sitting, leaning back in his leather chair, his legs outstretched, shoes off, and ankles crossed. Papers rested on his chest. A gold-plated pitcher dribbled condensation onto a gold platter. A cut crystal bottle, the label reading, "Macallan 1824 Series Number 6, Single Malt," was at his elbow, a glass beside it, the scotch leg still draining down the side of the empty glass. His hair was loose on his shoulders, his clothing blood-splattered. There were even a few drops on his face. The stench of old blood had to be horrible to an apex predator, but he hadn't cleaned up. And he was drinking scotch. His hands were uncovered except for the bandage on his fingers. He'd lost some in a fight recently, and they were still reattaching. It was a vamp thing. He didn't look up as we entered. I stood there for a moment, watching, evaluating. Then I leaned over and took the papers off his chest. It was the werecat parlay agreement that someone had retrieved from the Royal Sinesta. The pages rustled softly as I flipped through them, scanning, Eli reading at my side. The opening paragraph was like a thesis statement, saying that three parties were aligning in a triumvirate of power. The European Emperor, the were-creatures, African were-cats and a small pack of rogue werewolves, and two vamps, Dominique Kisser and Bensim Malariel. "Ah," I breathed, putting things together. Sim had caused the anomaly. That was why the magic in the gym had felt so familiar. That was why the wares had attacked. I knew Bansom Malariel. She had mind magic. She had an obfuscation spell unlike any other I had ever seen. Sim was both witch and vamp. She had been the heir to Jack Chaffru, the Mexican MOC, a pirate vamp, one of many fangheads in the last 2 years who tried to take over New Orleans. Bansim had kidnapped Molly, had hurt Molly, had nearly killed Eli. During my fight with Chaffru, when Eli nearly died, I had staked Sim. But I hadn't taken her head and she had disappeared. Clearly she had been dragged off the battlefield and healed. The rogue werewolves had always been Leo's enemies, as had Tidus, the EVs, and Sim. Dominique was the glue that held them all together, and she had sworn to Clan des Citrons, which was not mentioned here. A clan would have their own parley agreements, not one tied in with the hoi polloi. Dominique and Van Sim had their talons in a lot of pies, the least known and understood Clan des Citrons. I needed to find out about the clan, who they were, what they wanted, where they were, everything. The summary was the part that mattered. They had all signed and agreed to pacts of aggression against their enemies. When Tidus defeated Leo, he would destroy the Bighorn Pack and give the huge territory to Prism, Jax, and their pack. Tidus would also grant all of Leo's territory to the two female vamps, making them together the two most powerful vamps in the United States. I dropped the papers on the desk. Leo didn't look up. Softly, he said, "The weight of years, the weight of my enemies, the weight of betrayal rests heavily on my shoulders." It was the tone of depression, melancholy, and failure. Eli glanced at me and gave me a quirky half-grin. He leaned over and took Leo's glass and the decanter, holding them to the lamp. "This goes for around $6,500 a bottle." He sloshed a bit in the glass and swirled it, sniffed, added a few drops of water from the gold pitcher, swirled and sniffed again. Leo slowly turned his head, one of those non-human snaky gestures they did, watching my partner. "I did not offer you my scotch, He-Man." Eli sipped, swirling the liquor in his mouth, swallowing in tiny bursts, breathing down the fumes. "Not bad. Not better than a 35-year-old Balvenie, but not bad." He sipped again, watching Leo. Leo said, "I have a 46-year-old Balvenie, 1968, cast 72-93, in my cellar." Eli nodded, sipped again. "Nice. Since you're all whiny and giving up, can I have the Balvenie? I'd hate for Tidus to get his paws on it." Eli glanced at me. "Begging the pardon of the pawed and pelted."
"Pardon granted," I said, letting my amusement tell in my tone. "Whiny?" Leo asked, his eyes slowly vamping out. "You are asking to raid my estate. I am not dead."
His fangs snicked down.
"Not yet. And you've got the home advantage. And you now know all your enemies. But you sound defeated. You sound as if you've given up. What you believe about the outcome is 3/4 of the battle, so you've already lost. You're dead, old man."
Eli sipped, sizing Leo up like a young recruit on the day of battle.
"And I'm drinking your scotch without your permission."
Leo shot out of the chair straight at Eli. His jaw landed on my fist. The pop of displaced air and the thump of chin to fist overlapped. Leo dropped back, sitting on the desktop, shaking his head. He started laughing and his fangs snapped up. That was 3/4 of the battle won back. I could have kissed my partner. Leo looked us over, his gaze taking in my human clothes and my cat face, hands, and feet. I could see him thinking about asking me how much of my other parts were cat-shaped. "Don't," I said. The skin around his eyes crinkled with amusement. He slid back into his desk chair and Eli and I took chairs. Maybe it was rude to sit without being asked, but I was tired, as if the little bit of fighting I had done had taken a lot out of me. When he didn't object, I put my paws up on the small table as if it was an ottoman. Leo let me get comfortable. "We need to chat about..." Leo held up a hand, stopping me. Kennel, the sommelier, entered the office, carrying a tray with a dozen bottles of beer on it. All of the bottles and cans were cold and sweating with condensation, the way Americans lacked beer, which meant this was not part of the taste testing that went along with being the MOC. Kennell set the tray on the table near my arm and indicated it, as if telling me to take a pick. "Our master of the city is pleased to toast your ascension to Clan Bloodmaster. What would you like?" I pointed to a can of local Nola Brewing Company beer. The Mecca Brew had a red dragon on front that was eating part of the uptown. And then I pointed to the Irish Channel Stout by the same company. Kennell opened both cans and poured each into a frosted beer glass, the pair of which he placed on the table at my other side. He produced a new glass for Leo and poured the scotch and water. Leo sat back in his chair, examining me in my half-form. There was no distaste or judgment in his eyes. Rather, there was that hint of delight. Leo's enjoyment of my form fell away, leaving him pensive again. "I have no way to properly toast you, my Jane. The appropriate toast for a new bloodmaster of a clan is from the jugular of a virgin boy or girl, with the words long undeath, prosperity, scions, blood, and cattle." I looked at my beer. "Yeah, beer is better. And how about live long and prosper?" Leo gave no indication that he found me funny as he lifted his scotch in a toast. Eli followed the example with his glass. I picked up the Mecca, holding it out and slightly up. Leo repeated my words. "Live long and prosper." Hearing the Vulcan blessing from Leo's lips was giggle-worthy, but I managed to smother the laugh. Leo drank and ate a few nuts. Eli and I followed his example. In companionable silence, I finished my beer. Then Leo refilled the scotch glasses and pushed my second beer to me. Leo said,
"However, I prefer you nit, you shit, etch, you chip."
I stopped with the beer held in the air, ice water dripping from my fingers. Eli said,
"Klingon? You did not just say live long and prosper in Klingon."
"Oh, but I did, and I do hope that my Jane may live many decades more and prosper greatly."
He held up his free hand in the Vulcan V salute, gave an abbreviated nod, and sipped. Holy crap. Leo knew about Star Trek. A lot about Star Trek. Alex would have a cow. Eyes gleaming, Leo sipped again, and I remembered to lower my arm and drink too. Leo said,
"I was informed that the white werewolf was biting Josie's Santana."
Finally, we were getting to important stuff. Yeah, and werewolf spit seems to make the SOD less magical. Does he taste different?
"I've not tasted Josie's in recent days,"
Leo said, wryly.
"I understand that the werecats who attacked us had fed from the Son of Darkness prior to them attacking us in the gym. Were you aware of this?"
I said, "I figured it out. Dominique let them in and destroyed the cameras along the way. We don't have video footage."
"Why did Dominique Kisser betray her sworn oath to Gregoire and to me after we forgave her trespasses and restored her to us? This has troubled me for..."
He rotated a hand as if to say, "for a long time." "Magic, again? Lemon-smelling magic." Tiredly, I asked, "Does it matter?" Leo pondered this and then shook his head.
"No."
"You have the parlay papers between the Euro Vamps and Dominique and Sim, and what I hope will soon be a dead rogue werewolf pack. The Bighorn Pack is hunting for any werewolf remnants still in the city. Alex will concentrate on Bansim, Clan de Citron, and Dominique. When he finds their lair, I'll take it out. That leaves only the Euro Vamps. Easy peasy." Leo smiled slightly and set down the remainder of his scotch, as if it had lost flavor.
"We will fight within 2 nights. It will be, as you Americans say, winner take all, which will make you the Emperor of Europe. I studied him. For all that you're a selfish narcissist with tendencies to see everyone on Earth as tools to be used or discarded, you'll rule well.
Leo laughed, but it was a vamp laugh, all pathos and no human humor.
You honor me. Honor I do not deserve in the human understanding of the term, for I haunt you, my Jean, my enforcer, my dark queen.
For once, I decided not to object to the titles or the possessives. He knew how I felt about them all. I sipped. After a moment, Leo sipped again, too. Eli watched us like a hawk, eyes piercing and steady.
You guys decided where the fights are gonna be? I asked. You've left me out of that decision-making process.
Such decisions are above your pay grade.
Well, wasn't that just ducky? I need to get the venue security in place.
I have not kept you in the dark without cause. I have used you for the purposes I need.
He swirled his drink again, watching the scotch legs drain down the glass.
As of 2 hours past, the decision has been made to situate the Sangra Duelo on one or another Chitimacha tribal island, not far from Port Aids, Leo said. There are 3 tribal islands, with houses that have been shared with Clan Pellissier since the early 1800s, and the tribe has allowed us to maintain the homes and the grounds for a reasonable fee.
I thought about that, sipped the last of my beer and said, as tribal lands, the islands fall under non-U.S. lands use, so you can dock there and so can Tidus.
Correct. It can be argued that technically the U.S. government has no jurisdiction there.
They might dispute that, I said. In court.
They might, he agreed. However, as we will not be announcing the exact locale, the duello will be long over by the time the government decides how to apply the law to us, the Chitimacha, and Titus. Put the proper paperwork together and go to a judge for legal writs to charge us or to stop us.
Or they could just blow you out of the water as soon as you all arrive, drop a bomb on the island or napalm it and be done with the biggest, baddest vamps on the planet. Leo didn't reply to that one, still turning his crystal glass. You're planning that by the time they figure out where the fights are taking place, Titus's head will have rolled. But the military has satellite capability and radar and missiles. Leo still said nothing. You got a map of the places with GPS? Leo pulled up a topo map of the toe of Louisiana on his computer and turned it to me. 3 places were fuzzed out, the way U.S. military installations are fuzzed out on satellite maps. I frowned at him and Leo said,
some time ago, I arranged to have them pixelated.
His tone questioned the term.
Money has its privileges.
Isla de U, I said, reading the name of one. Island of the Waters. Leo looked impressed that I could translate the French, but Ile and U were pretty easy. Spitfire Island and Contempt Isle. So when do we go?
A few housekeeping and landscaping blood servants were dispatched a week past, just in case an island proved acceptable to Titus. To each of the 3 islands, along with a well-paid construction crew, to determine the house's suitability and state of disrepair. Security went down with the construction crew to evaluate those concerns. As soon as the final venue is decided upon, you will, of course, go down and oversee preparations for security. The crews involved with the immediate evaluation and cleanup don't know they are there to begin initial preparation for a possible Mithrin occupation.
They have had no contact with the outside world since they arrived at the islands.
Each house is primitive by modern-day standards. No cellular, no internet. We may not have hot and cold running water or indoor toilets. Minimal electricity, all solar. We will have a small staff, most of them camping. Those of us who have been challenged will either stay on site in light-safe rooms or be flown in by helicopter. On-site bunk room space will be provided for Clan Yellow Rock and the security team and blood servants. Other bunk rooms may be available as needed, though the occupants may need to switch off, as you say.
I'm not concerned about the sleeping arrangements. I'm concerned about the security. Why was I not involved with this?
Your Alex has been an active participant, looking over all three sites. He has a preference, and I am doing all I can in negotiations to accommodate him and the security needs.
And Alex hadn't told me. Leo let a tiny human smile cross his features.
When a leader has trained his capable and loyal people well, my Jane, it is then time to let them go and perform the tasks one has assigned to them. I needed your skills and protection here at Council Chambers, not on an island many miles away.
I scowled at Leo, but he had a point. Alex was growing up and doing his job without being asked. Leo went on.
Titus and his people will anchor offshore and arrive after dusk each evening via motorized dory to the repaired docks. They will depart before dawn in the same small boats.
I put my paws on the floor and stood. You got any other news you want to share?
Leo stretched back and removed a sheet of paper from his printer, folded it once, and leaned to me, holding it out.
I narrowed my eyes at him and took the sheet. I opened the fold and glanced down. It was a list of opponents and fights. My name figured prominently. This is gonna suck.
I hope so, my Jane, Leo said, the twinkle back in his eyes. I do hope so.
Not what I meant. The partial smile slid away.
No, not what you meant. These next few days will be difficult. But you asked me if there was other information you needed to know. Yes, there is.
And?
As you requested, when you brought him here, I met privately with the man Ayatis Firewind. He requested to be present at the Sangre Duelo. I refused. He grows persistent.
We don't need Siled on the island in any capacity. They would be legally bound to try and stop duels to the death. Leo inclined his head as if to say he had taken that into consideration.
And yet, in the event of my true death, the presence of officers of the law might prevent both a bloodbath on shore and any action by the United States Navy or Coast Guard.
You think the military will take us all out if you lose?
Accidents happen. Even a deliberate bombardment of an inhabited island in the Gulf is not unheard of. Ask Eli Younger. He knows of such things. Ayatis Firewind has been kept apprised of all happenings in my city. I will think on this carefully and will discuss plans with you.
Softer, Leo said.
I have taken the scent of Firewind, and I was gifted with a single drop of his blood as pledge of his honor, if not his loyalty.
Gently, he added.
He is your brother, in truth.
I blinked, felt as if the world tilted and that I might fall. I took a breath to steady myself and the air was too dry, too cold.
What? I have taken the scent of the man claiming to be your brother. You were born of the same mother, sired by the same father. He is your full blood brother.
Both of the Youngers were relaxed in the living room. Alex at his desk, and Eli lying on the couch, where he had thrown himself when we entered, now looking deceptively tranquil and sleepy. I was standing in the entry, still in half-form, cranky and annoyed. To Alex I said, "You knew about the Sangre Duelo being at one of three islands, and didn't see fit to tell me?" "That's his job, Jane," Eli said, watching me from lazy eyes, his hands behind his head and feet crossed. "If you had known, the first thing you would have wanted to do was fly out and look around. You're busy. You have to delegate, but you suck at that. So I did the look-see. Alex oversaw the security. Now, tonight, you need to know, not before.
Very softly, I asked, is there anything else I need to know that I wasn't told? Eli sat up from his sprawl.
You're really pissed. Why?
Ayanis is my brother. Not said. I wanted to hit something hard. I felt Beast leap to the forefront of my brain and glow golden through my eyes. The look I sent him had Eli standing, his body angled to fight me, ready for me to hit him. He took a step back, clearing the space between us, giving himself room to block and plan, his eyes lit with delight. Eli always enjoyed giving me a chance to blow off steam, and he gave me a little, come on, wave, as if urging me to hit him for real, the way he did when we sparred. That's our job, Jane, he said, moving around me for a better attack angle. To evaluate a site and put a plan together. Your job, especially at this particular time, isn't the nuts and bolts. It's following the leads back to Leo's enemies. So you aren't mad about the islands. What are you really mad about, Jamie?
I frowned, not taking the hint to let out some aggression sparring. I was feeling helpless.
Yeah, helpless. And I hated that feeling.
Crap.
I dropped my stance and let my shoulders droop. Sorry. Did you find the SUV that took Dominique away from HQ? I asked Alex. Alex ducked his head over his tablet.
Alex?
Kid, what's up?
Quietly, he said. Rona Hogg and her sister Maisie.
I vaguely remembered Rona. She was one of the Atlanta recruits, training for a possible security position in the new Atlanta clan, in Katie's new clan.
Weird.
Okay.
Her sister's a gamer. I sort of know Maisie.
Eli and I went still as hunting cats.
No, in the casual sense, or in the biblical sense,
Eli said.
Not sure what that means, bro, but we got to second base on gamer night a few weeks back. She had questions. I gave her answers. Lots of answers. She's trying to get on as part of the security team, too, so I thought it was okay. She made you feel important,
Eli said. She made goo-goo eyes at you, let you feel her boobs, and you caved. I said.
Sorta.
Alex mumbled, his dark-skinned face going red.
Rona and Maisie Hogg helped Dominique get in and out the first time. I got a good still shot from a street cam. They were in the car with her, Rona driving.
Where did they go?
They ditched the SUV off I-10. I lost them.
I said something my house mother might have slapped my face for. Alex's eyes went wide.
You need to see Aggie Onefeather,
Eli said, not unkindly.
I'm busy, I said, my voice reverberating. And you need to take Iotis with you.
The last statement was like being slapped across the face for real.
What?
I said. My shoulders dropped, my face wrinkled up, and I took another step back, further widening the space between us. Eli hadn't relaxed his stance.
A man claiming to be your brother appeared out of nowhere, alleging things that were confusing and frightening. He appeared when it was convenient to him, instead of making a ceremonial visit that would have shown you he cared. Leo just confirmed Iotis is really your brother. You're not acting like yourself, you're acting like a pissed-off cat, all claws and attitude. Too much aggression, and not enough thinking. Too much cat.
Beast reared up in me, my eyes glowing. I growled softly.
Yeah, see? Alex said. Growly and catty.
I'm not going to see Aggie. I don't have time for a sweat.
Fine,
Eli said, sitting down on the edge of the couch. His action seemed purposeful, as if to de-escalate the tension in the room.
But I called Iotis and told him Leo confirmed your relationship. You can talk to Iotis with or without the tribal elder. Either way, Iotis is here. You want answers, he wants answers. Aggie is an elder and she can give them to you.
And she's waiting, Alex said. Eli called her too. Four knocks sounded on the front door. Tap, 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 tap. Iotis's knock. The urge to hit something swept me up, taking me over for maybe a half dozen too rapid heartbeats. I clenched my fists to keep the claws retracted and swallowed down my own emotions. Breathed. Forced the rage down. Down away and back. Eli was right. I was angry for all the wrong reasons. I needed to get the information about my supposed brother. I needed to settle this personal thing so I could deal with the Sangre Duello. When the fury had passed, I asked, "What does Leo get if Iotis is my brother? Why drop this on me now before the Sangre Duello?" Eli frowned. So did Alex. "Right. Leo shared info without a quid pro quo. He gets something out of this deal. Leo always gets something out of any deal. If Iotis and I become chummy, then Leo has another talent hooked into Psyled. And Leo said something about how having Psyled at the blood duel might keep the Navy and Coast Guard from dropping bombs on us if Leo loses." Eli gave his battle face frown.
"Bombardment isn't likely, but I'm keeping my ear to the ground."
"And if Iotis is your brother and Leo was just being nice?" Alex asked.
"Really?" I moved to the front door, my back to them, but speaking over my shoulder. "Leo, nice?"
"Good point," Alex said, sounding vaguely surprised.
"Huh, follow the money and the political power." He was already banging away on his tablets and his laptop. I opened the front door, half cat and spittin' mad, to see the topic of the conversation on my front porch. I blocked his entrance with my body, watched the shock on his face as he took me in and almost went for his weapon. I gave him a cat smile, all fangs and fur. "Hiya, baby brother, if that's who you really are. Get back in your car. We're going to sweat." And I slammed the door in his surprised face. Whirling to Eli, I grabbed a go bag and said, "You're driving." It took the entire ride to Aggie's, while strapped into the back seat, to shift into full human form. It was slow, a bone-breaking, tendon-snapping process, and I whined and moaned the whole way. It hurt. After telling me to man up, Eli put on music so he didn't have to listen. Man up. Really? Evil man. When I looked like me again, like Jane again, I let myself out of the seat belt and changed into warm, baggy sweatpants and an oversized sweatshirt, crawled up front, and slumped in the passenger seat. Eli was listening to a Joe Bonamassa album playing "You Left Me Nothing But the Bill and the Blues," music I liked. I tied my hair in a knot and let it hang down my back and leaned my head against the seat, giving my muscles time to stop quivering and aching. When Joe was finished playing Drive, I clicked the music off. Silence filled the car and I could smell my own pain and disquiet. "Are you mad at me?" I snapped my mouth shut. I sounded like a 12-year-old girl whining to her besties. Eli said, "Babe," in that tone that told me everything was okay between us, and shook his head.
"No, I'm not mad at you, Janie. I'm worried. You have a lot going on right now, personally and professionally. You have Iotis. You have all the magical trinkets in the closet. You're still getting over being struck by lightning. There's the construction, the new clanmaster position. In a couple days, we'll be on an island in the middle of the Gulf of Mexico, an island with questionable GPS coordinates and no secure landing field. On an island with no backup and no way off except an unarmed or unarmored helicopter or two, and Uncle Sam's Navy in the nearest port."
"Officially," I conceded.
"Officially what?"
"Well, Bruiser has a boat." Eli glanced away from the road.
"Does he now?"
"I was on it. It has a cabin and a teapot and everything."
"And it'll be moored nearby?"
I looked away from Eli, out the window at the night. It was cloudy, the kind of clouds that portended a harder rain than a heavy mist.
It's Bruiser. What do you think? Eli might have relaxed a hair. Good to know. Maybe I'll text him and ask for a sit rep.
Leo had said to let my people do their jobs. I'm micromanaging everything, aren't I?
Yep, trying to.
Eli was on the job. Alex was ahead of the job. Bruiser was always on the job, intended to plan in advance like a vamp. I wasn't alone anymore, but I was still acting as if I was. I'd been flying by the seat of my pants so long I was surprised my undies didn't have wings. We made the rest of the trip to Aggie's, the quiet settling between us like a lazy cat, and tiny misty raindrops settling onto the windshield. It would have been pleasant, except that I was always aware of the headlights behind us, the car driven by Iotis Firewind, who might truly be my brother. I knocked on Aggie's door as the sun grayed the sky, and the stars began to vanish. The front porch light was on, and the windows were lit with a pale glow.
I smelled cedarwood smoke and coffee.
Aggie and her mother were up and moving around, which might have been part of the younger brother's call, or part of Aggie's early-to-rise lifestyle. Eli pulled out of the drive and headed back up the road. Iotis parked on what was technically a cul-de-sac and dimmed his headlights. The car door opened and closed. Aggie opened the door.
Egini Agayalgei,
I said, speaking her name in Tsalagi. Elder of the people, I seek your counsel.
Dalunegei digadoli,
Aggie said. Then she looked at the man walking up the steps behind me.
You must be Iotis Nagitsale, the one who claims kinship with Jane, according to the elders of the Eastern Tsalagi, and the brothers who have adopted her as sister. Brothers who stand at her side in battle.
I sort of thought that put Iotis in his place, and I felt a little of the stiffness in my shoulders ease. Iotis didn't answer. Aggie went on.
Do you seek counsel as well? One who dreams of Firewind.
I do, Unilisi.
Lisi will do. Are you both fasting?
I nodded. I assumed Iotis did too.
Go, wash, dress. Wait for me in the sweat house.
I started to ask for separate waiting areas, but Aggie closed the door in my face, pretty much the way I had done to Iotis, but with less ire in it. Great. I didn't want to be alone with Iotis, which was probably why Aggie made it happen. Elders were sneaky. I looked back at Iotis and jutted my chin to the sweat house. Hope you like cold showers. Iotis sighed.
I'd rather have the coffee I smell.
I'm a tea kind of gal, but yeah, coffee would work.
Coffee.
Common grounds, haha. Side by side, our weapons left behind, we trudged to the sweat house, a wood hut with a metal roof located at the back of the property, in the winter bare limbs of trees. In the rear of the building, I pointed to the spigots and Iotis dipped his head in a half bow. He said,
You first, my sister. I'll wait until you're inside.
He stepped back to the front of the building. His words were careful, as was his body language. There was something there in his manner and words, if I could only figure out what. I stripped, hung my clothes on the empty hook, and turned the water on, and managed not to curse as the icy water drenched me. Not bothering to dry off, I pulled on the undyed cotton shift hanging on the nail, braided my hair out of the way. The shifts were better than the undyed lengths of cloth tied above my boobs I'd used on other sweats, especially with a man in the room. I stopped. I had never been to sweat with anyone other than Aggie and her mother. I wasn't sure how this was supposed to work. I didn't like not knowing what to expect. I tied off the tip of my braid with a bit of string pulled from the inside seam of the shift, my fingers suddenly and unexpectedly clumsy. I opened the low door and stepped inside. The sweat house was already warm, and I shivered at the change in temperature.